You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mottis from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. We've got all of the interviews up from Tuesday night's very exciting win over the Oklahoma City Thunder, so you're going to want to check that out. I thought Will Barton in particular, Will Barton's always a great quote, but I thought he was especially on his quote game in the locker room after this one. Just provided some great insight. He met with an old advisor, one of his old college coaches. He talked about how he kind of had a heart-to-heart with him going into this game. It was a really, really good one, so check that out. Comment, subscribe, do all that stuff. Today, I am joined. This is the second episode of the Stiff Summit, and I am joined by the former Big Stiff, Andy Feinstein. Andy, what's going on?
Hey, Adam. Thanks for having me back on. Appreciate it. Especially after a huge victory last night. What a game.
So we were talking a little bit about just how washed you are. And this happens to me too. Like some of these like West Coast games, they can be tough. You caught up with this game a little bit later with it, as we've been known to do. But what a big win. I mean, this win, to me, it was important because Denver could lose and still have gotten the two seed. I think with the win, they probably get it. But the more importantly, they just look like a better team. I think they're better than the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Well, I think they're better, too. I think they're, first of all, they're deeper. Something we're going to talk about later in the show today is I think they're a happier team, which makes a huge difference. I think there's a lot of pressure, actually, in Oklahoma City that I think is energetically feeding into the team. Yeah. But again, last night shut the door, in my opinion, on the Thunder even thinking about becoming the second seed. What were they, a game or two behind us just a few weeks ago?
Yeah, exactly.
And now they're, what, 3-4 games behind us?
So, I think 5 effectively with tiebreakers.
Yeah. So I think that last night really, really shut the door. And give the Nuggets credit. No last second Russell Westbrook three-pointer that we have to watch ad nauseum on every NBA highlight reel every time they talk about Russell. Didn't happen last night, Russell. You're still one of the best players in the NBA, and we applaud you for that. But take that L and go back to Oklahoma City with your ugly alternative uniforms, and take those with you too.
So ESPN's headline last night was Westbrook comes up one assist shy in a loss, or the triple-double in a loss.
Right.
Could have been Jokic comes up one assist shy of a triple-double in a win. It's kind of funny how the headlines work. But
I think Jokic has 12 triple-doubles this season.
He does.
And the Nuggets record, I believe, is 17 in 1 year by Fat Lever.
Is that no? I thought he already had the record.
Oh, does he already have the record?
I thought he did. Yeah, I'm almost positive that.
Or is he on his way to exceeding Fat Lever's like total
all time? Yeah, something like that. We'll have to look it up.
But yeah, Jokic one assist shy. Yeah. He's a machine. And what's amazing about Jokic's triple doubles is how quickly they happen.
Yeah,
it's like he gets a triple double in 13 minutes of playing time.
Yeah,
I'm exaggerating a little bit, but he gets a lot. He gets them quickly.
I also love Michael Malone pulled him out with like 50 seconds to go and with one rebound shy. And it's one of those perfect things where it's like, yeah, he doesn't care. Nobody cares. But he would have definitely glad at the end of the game. That's when all the rebounds just kind of fall into your lap because nobody's trying to rebound anymore. So he probably could have got it. We laughed that Russell Westbrook probably found that to be the strangest thing that you would check out of a game one stat shy.
Yeah, exactly.
But
he probably has a little more authority over his coach than Jokic has over his coach. So
you said something I like there though, that the way you phrased it, the Thunder probably aren't even thinking about the two seed. And actually, the thinking part is really what it was. Denver slammed the door, I think. They put themselves in great position to get that two seed. But I think more importantly, they got the psychological edge. They are 3-0 against the Thunder this year. They beat them once in Oklahoma City down two starters. They beat them down in this game. It ended up being an 11-point game, which sounds close. They were up by 20. You know, they were up big time, 18 points in this game. So I think Denver, this game, they got a psychological edge. And how crazy is it that Denver has a psychological edge on a team that was projected to be a conference finals contender?
Yeah, the Nuggets have a psychological edge not just over the Thunder, but they give the Warriors a hard time too. I don't think the Warriors. Well, I forgot about that. Well, never mind. I strike that from the record. I was thinking of last year when they beat the Warriors.
Well, they got them once this year.
They did get them once this year, but they definitely have a psychological edge over the Thunder. I am a little concerned about the Warriors and the Rockets in terms of the psychological edge component. But, you know, the Nuggets beat the Jazz handily here in Denver. This Thursday night will be a big test.
Yeah, well,
I think if they can, because that could be a matchup. You know, that could be a 2-7. against Utah. And I think the beatdown against the Clippers on Sunday, a game I got to go to, my first live game since our baby was born. And, you know, it's fun watching the Nuggets take down the Clippers because that could be a 2-7 matchup too. So they definitely have a psychological edge on kind of the bottom feeders of the playoffs, guys, plus Oklahoma City. The Rockets and the Warriors remain a problem.
Yeah, and the Lakers, should they make it? But the Lakers now, where are you at with the Lakers in terms of, I never want to count them out, but I'm almost ready to.
I'm very ready to. And I should probably look and see how difficult their schedule. You would know better than me.
Their schedule, I think they have the third toughest schedule. They have one of the tougher schedules.
If you're losing to the Pelicans without Anthony Davis, you're losing to the Grizzlies, who have nobody left except a worn down Mike Conley.
And are trying to lose.
Yeah, and they're trying to lose. And the Lakers have, the wheels have come off. The question is how much can the NBA rig it to get the Lakers back into the playoffs? Because it's a disaster for the Lakers if the Lakers don't make the playoffs. But, you know, LeBron, I said this on the last show that we did together a month ago. I thought this was his greatest basketball challenge in terms of the moves he's made, and I think that's proving to be the case. But this may be too daunting of a basketball challenge. Now, had he not missed a month, maybe they wouldn't have been in this precarious situation, but they're in big trouble, and they just don't have a good team. I thought you had a great quote last time we talked, which was, they're basically the Suns plus LeBron James, right? And the Suns have 12 wins.
Yeah.
So they're just, they're not a great team. I'm worried they may not even be a well-coached team. And like I said earlier, can the NBA rig it for the Lakers to get back? We'll see.
So Magic Johnson had a quote. I don't know how I missed this one, but last Summer League, he's sitting down at Summer League on the broadcast talking about how they built their roster. And he said shooting is overrated, which, you know, there's a lot of these old-time guys, brilliant. Like, there's nobody questions if Magic Johnson is a brilliant basketball player and basketball mind. He is. But the game evolves, and some people don't evolve with it. And if you say that shooting is not important in today's NBA, it tells me you just do not understand how the game has evolved.
Well, that's a great point. And I relate Magic Johnson and LeBron's situation to John Elway and Peyton Manning's situation.
Ooh, interesting.
And, you know,
I like this.
Very similar. You know, if you think about Peyton Manning's football career, how he had this phenomenal career in Indianapolis, but he did leave a little bit on the table. Yeah. I blame Tony Dungy and Jim Caldwell for turning 4 Super Bowls for Peyton Manning into 1. But Peyton Manning still had something to prove. I think he was in his his mid-30s when he came here to Denver. Very similar situation. And Peyton Manning is to the NFL what Magic Johnson kind of is to the NBA. And I think that Elway's showing a little bit to be kind of an overly old-school guy himself. You know, that's why he's signing Joe Flacco. That's why he overpaid for Case Keenum. And I'm worried Magic has those same tendencies. To your point, you know, they're not evolving with the game. And and how do you tell John Elway or Magic Johnson no? You know? And historically, with very few exceptions, and Larry Bird may be one of them, but usually these really, really good players make terrible coaches and not particularly good general managers.
Right.
You know, because they're not open-minded. They're used to sycophants. Look at how Michael Jordan's running the Hornets. Who's going to tell Michael Jordan no? Look at Isaiah Thomas's career as a coach and as a GM. Disaster.
You're talking about that Isaiah Thomas, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird. That's like the 4 biggest icons from 1980 to 1990.
I understand, but they're not. None of them have turned out to be good, except for Larry
Bird. I'm agreeing with you.
Except for Larry Bird. And even, for a local example, Dan Issel, who I think is a wonderful guy, he's a super great guy, did a decent job as a coach here, obviously, with the 94 team. But his second go-around in Denver was a disaster. I mean, Dan Issel as a president and as a coach, I mean, these old-school guys just don't get it. And there's a reason why the Tim Connellys and the Masai Ujiris and the Michael Malones and the Budenholzers of the world are kind of taking over this league. I think that the owners are realizing, like, let's go with the Moneyball type system and get away from just because you... Oh, here, I'll give you another name. Sorry, I'm rambling, but Joe Dumars. You know, there's another guy who had the magic touch until he didn't.
Until he didn't.
Because he refused to evolve, and he was a phenomenal, phenomenal player. So I think you got to be really cautious with guys like that running your team.
This is like business. You're a businessman, though, right? Some of the things you can do in the 80s, you have to adjust in the 90s, and the internet changes business. You have to adjust.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, the Kroenke organization deserves a lot of credit. A mutual friend of yours and mine, Brett Barup, who sadly passed recently, I know he was working with the organization on a whole analytics department, and that I don't think there's an accident as to why the Nuggets are really good and the Rams are really good, because they looked at a lot of talent from an analytical perspective, in addition to, you've still got to have those old school tendencies. You need to be able to watch a guy and say, he's got good feet, he's got a good arm, he's got a good shooting touch. You know, no computer is going to tell you that. But you got to have the right balance. And I'm worried, again, I think the Lakers, and frankly, I think the Broncos are in trouble for that reason.
Two very successful franchises that might be coming to the end of their dynasty.
Yeah, we'll find out.
We got a lot more coming up here, but first I want to tell you about my favorite sponsor of this show, Realtor Ryan Dykstra of Ion Real Estate. You can reach him at 303-217-1533. I've met Ryan now through this show. He's a big-time listener of this show, diehard Denver Nuggets fan, been a season ticket holder for 10 years, Colorado native, and he knows this market well. He's just passionate. I'm passionate about talking and writing about the Denver Nuggets. He's passionate about helping people find and sell real estate in the Denver metro area. He knows this market inside and out. He's got lots of experience working in real estate, and he just enjoys helping people figure out the market. Whether you're a first-time home buyer, you want to know what the process is like. How do you get a loan? What type of loan should you get? What kind of neighborhood should you buy in? He's got all that information for you, and he can walk you through whether you're a seasoned buyer or a first-time buyer. And if you're looking for an investment home, I always tell people real estate's been the best investment I've ever made. I know, Andy, I know you've had some success with real estate. It's a great time, and it's a great investment to get into a home and to own your home. Stop renting. So give him a call, 303-217-1533. And again, that's Realtor Ryan of Ion Real Estate. Support the people that support this show, and that is him. I'm back here with Andy Feinstein, and we have some things we want to talk about here. The other day, I had Dave Dufour on, terrific host, Count the Dings Network, and we were talking about teams just not being happy, and there's a handful of teams that are. But when you look at the contenders, the Nuggets seem like the only team that are just having, like, they almost look like a high school team where you're playing with your buddies and everything's fun and you're on road trips and you know, it almost doesn't seem like work to these guys. What's your take on this?
Well, I saw that you talked about that on your podcast the other night, and you know, the World Economic Forum has what's called the Happiness Index, and they rank countries based
this
on how
happy.
This
is why I love having you on, because you're the only person that would bring up the World Happiness
Index. Well, but the World Happiness Index is really interesting, and you know, I think their latest report, you know, if you look at the top 10-ish countries, it's almost always Scandinavia plus Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. And the reason, you know, I think that the latest rankings, Finland and Norway and Denmark and Iceland were in the top four. And the reason those countries routinely rank in the top 10 of happiness is for one reason, and really one reason only.
I can't wait for this.
Low expectations. You know, if you live in Finland or Denmark or Iceland or even Switzerland or the Netherlands, which round out the top six, you just can't make that much money. You know, the government gets you for 50-60% of whatever you make. They basically forces everyone into the middle class. So their expectations of life are just lower, which means everything from there is upside. So I relate that to the NBA. And if you look at, you know, you look at who's leading in the NBA right now, if you think about the Milwaukee Bucks and the Indiana Pacers and our beloved Denver Nuggets, and maybe even I'll throw the Portland Trailblazers in there. You're talking about four small market teams who really have had low expectations going into this season. Nobody had any of those four teams competing for the championship, right? And when everyone thinks about the championship, they were thinking about the Boston Celtics, they were thinking about the Golden State Warriors, the Houston Rockets, and maybe the Toronto Raptors, and then you can throw in maybe even the Sixers. You're talking about five monster market teams here, okay? But these four small market teams who had no expectations whatsoever, to me, this is all like gravy, house money, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And I think that's why they're exhibiting so much happiness on the court and why they're succeeding. You know, we talked about this in my guest column that I wrote, and thank you for letting me write a guest column, but I related the Nuggets to the Bucks. You know, I call the Bucks the Stiffs of the East.
It's accurate.
And our history is so interesting. You know, they literally are our doppelganger in the other conference for so many reasons going back for 30 years. But again, you know, our two franchises combined have won five playoff series in 30 years. Four out of those five were coached by George Karl.
I love that stat.
And the
30 years is a long time.
To repeat myself, the expectations are just low. Whereas, you know, look at the Raptors. I mean, they went all in on Kawhi Leonard, which, give our friend Masai Ujiri credit, great trade, but they're championship or bust.
Yeah.
Look at the Oklahoma City Thunder. I mean, Paul George deciding to stay there and not sell out and go to LA, great move, but there's a lot of pressure on that Thunder team. You know, and there's always that pressure there about Westbrook and George make it work.
I think the Thunder are happy. I think they're like Westbrook is an edgy guy anyway, but I think the Thunder are in a good spot. Because and the other thing about the Thunder, and it's similar to Denver, the Warriors, and anytime you're on top, you become the evil empire. So everybody I think is kind of pulling for the small market Thunder, the guys who stayed quote unquote loyal, even if that's kind of a goofy thing to say. They're pulling for them to beat the Warriors. So I think they fall in the category at least a little bit.
Fair enough. But let's go back to the happiness index. Now let's talk about the teams that were supposed to contend this year.
Okay.
The Warriors, the Celtics, the Sixers, the Rockets. 4-4, they're miserable.
They're going to throw Lakers in there too, because a lot of people said Lakers as well.
Yeah, forget the Lakers. Right, they're miserable too. and they're all miserable. You watch them play. You know, I remember when LeBron played in Miami. There was not a happy 4 years. Like, yeah, they decimated people, and he was really good. Those were hollow championships.
They had highs.
Those were hollow championships. They weren't happy. You know, everyone hated him. Everyone was out to get him, just like they are with this Warriors team. Kevin Durant has looked like a miserable SOB ever since he put the Warriors jersey on, you know? And I know we talked about that last podcast. We don't need to do it again, but... But the Warriors just aren't happy. They went from the happy-go-lucky team with the happy-go-lucky coach that won 73 games and everybody was rooting for, and now everybody hates them, and they feel it. And then, you know, in the Rockets, I mean, there is so much pressure on that Rockets team to, like, maximize this Chris Paul window that's rapidly closing. The Celtics are a mess. And then the 76ers, kind of like the Warriors, who built their team organically through some drafts and had some tough seasons and finally got their act together. But then you throw in Jimmy Butler, who's not exactly a fun guy to have in the locker room, and now they're not playing well. So I just think that the weight of expectations are making those four or five, throw the Lakers in, unhappy, whereas the Nuggets and the Bucks and their like are the beneficiaries of the happiness index.
So here lies the question then. Looking at the trajectory of this Denver Nuggets team, when do the expectations arrive and when does it become a little bit more maybe not or less happy-go-lucky?
You know, it actually happened here once in Denver. You're right. Actually, you know what? If you look at all three Nuggets teams that went to the conference finals, and I believe this year's team will be the fourth.
Ooh.
But if you look at all
big prediction.
If you look at all three, think about their happiness index, okay? The late 70s team comes in from the ABA. These NBA snobs thought the Nuggets were going to be nobodies. And then within 2 years of coming into the NBA, the Nuggets are in the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah.
With that run and gun, slam dunk, crazy shooting team of David Thompson and Dan Issel and Monty Tau, who we're going to talk about in a little bit. They were in the Conference Finals within 2 years. You know, look at the 84-85 Nuggets Conference Finals. That's Alex English, Fat Lever, the dawn of the Stiffs era, you know, or I should say the peak of the Stiffs era. You know, they get to the conference finals. But then look at the 08-09 Nuggets. The year before, 07-08, we've got Allen Iverson.
Yeah.
We've got Marcus Camby. Then you've got Kenyon, and you've got Carmelo, and you've got George Karl. And you've got,
these were good teams.
You know, we had all these top five picks, and there was so much pressure on that team to be successful that they folded like a deck chair. They get rid of Marcus Camby. They get rid of Allen Iverson.
Two big upgrades.
Yeah, all of a sudden, Nene, who was never healthy, Kmart, who's never healthy, Chris Anderson, who's on a schlepper $300,000 contract, whatever they gave him, all of a sudden are getting meaningful playing time. No expectations. And they bring in Chauncey Billups. That's a fun Nuggets team. They get to the conference finals. So I think that there's something to be said for Denver having no expectations. And then, again, the Nuggets have definitely been crippled when the expectations are there. I mean, look, the 94 Nuggets, you know, upset the Seattle Supersonics. No expectations.
Right, right.
Never were able to replicate that.
Oh, yeah, and that's like a pure happiness. So let me ask you this then. You just said you think they're going to the conference finals. So are you putting expectations on them? Or you for yourself, I'm talking about you as a fan now. Are you going to be disappointed?
You can't be. You can't be.
There's nothing that can disappoint you this year.
You know what? They won 46 games last year.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're going to get that.
We haven't made
the
playoffs for 5 years. This is all upside. And I hope the fans understand that. I don't want to hear boos if, God forbid, they lose in the first round. Okay.
Yeah.
By all accounts, this has been a successful season. And I shouldn't say we expect them to get to the conference finals. I think they'll get to the conference finals.
Right, sure.
I think it's fair to say that if they lose in the first round, that'd be a big upset. But if they don't get past the second round, at the end of the day, they've got young guys who have never been to the playoffs other than Paul Millsap. or at least have substantive playoff experience. And I do think this team still needs some patience.
Yeah.
They still need some patience.
Patience, I think, is good. But opportunities are also limited. And one of the things I keep thinking, and people think of this Nuggets team now as being linear, because for four seasons now it has been. You win 30, then you win 40, sure. then you win 46, and now this. But the thing is, it's not linear after this, right? There's going to be peaks and valleys, and you're going to have, right now Denver has this great depth and camaraderie. It might be different next year. They might be more talented, but less together, or less deep, or something like that. So as much as you'd like it just to be this linear thing, I also want to move on, because I want to talk about the NBA ratings are down, and you have a couple thoughts on this. I don't know that the league's popularity is down, but the television ratings are.
Sure. Television is still driven largely by the big East Coast markets. You know, you're still at the mercy of New York City, which is enormously important in the television world. And don't sleep on Chicago. Don't sleep on Cleveland. I'm sure the ratings are pretty strong in Boston and in Philadelphia right now. But Miami's a big market, too, and they stink also.
Yeah.
So, you know, the combination of LeBron James being on the West Coast, which means not only is he playing at late times that are unwatchable to the East Coast, but by him not being on the Cleveland Cavaliers, you don't get national TV dates four times a year against the Heat and the Knicks and the Bucks and the Pacers and all the teams that LeBron was going up against. So LeBron himself was like a ratings generator for the East Coast. That's all been taken out. Combined with the fact that the Knicks suck, the Knicks suck, the Bulls suck, the Nets are all right, the Heat suck, the Celtics are struggling. You know,
the Nets are good, but they don't have a star.
And they don't. They don't have a star.
Yeah, they can't.
Well, they had a star, but the Lakers traded them. But anyway, it's always fun to pick on them. But so just that combination of LeBron being in the West, LeBron missing a month, combined with all the big market teams in the East really plummeting in the standings this year, the NBA ratings are tanking. But you're right. I actually think the league's very healthy. I think it's very robust. It's getting more and more global. They just announced this Africa League that they're going to kick off in 2020.
Oh, yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if you see something similar to that in Europe or Asia in the near future. So I think the NBA is in great shape. In fact, if I was a stock investor and I could bet long or short, I'd be going long on the NBA. I'd be shorting football.
Yeah.
So I think the NBA is in good shape.
Yeah, I think so too. The weird thing about ratings, I think there's another layer in this all that you have to watch basketball or almost always have to watch it on regional sports networks. And that means you have to have a cable package. And that means that you have to spend a lot of money for a bunch of channels that nobody under 35 is paying for. There's a weird stat. Television ratings are down, but the NBA's online footprint is up enormously. So people are reading, talking, and sharing content about the NBA, but they're watching it less, which is...
You know, that's a good point. I should have caught that, and I should have mentioned it in the guest column I wrote this week. You can watch this stuff in other mediums. You can watch it on your iPad. You can watch it on your phone.
Yeah.
I can order any NBA game I want on my Samsung smart TV at home. I don't have to subscribe to Comcast, which forces me to get... That way I can get altitude. I don't have to do that anymore. So I do think that there's probably better ways to track this. And I'm not, to be very clear, I am not worried at all about the NBA's popularity. But from a traditional television standpoint, the ratings are in a little bit of trouble this year.
You talk about some more numbers. The NBA is in a scoring uptick, and scoring is going up. You have some thoughts about this you wanted to share, and I'm going to debate you on them.
Well, I don't have the data handy. I'm just more of an optics guy. You know, what James Harden's a really good player.
Yeah.
But when a player like James Harden, he's no Michael Jordan. And when he's doing things that Michael Jordan did in the 80s, when Michael Jordan was getting his ass kicked every time he drove the lane, something to me is amiss. I think that there seems to be, and there's got to be some data on this that you may even know it, seems to be a lot more triple-doubles.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Russell Westbrook is a once-in-a-lifetime player. But for a guy to average a triple-double for two or three years in a row, I mean, this goes back to what Oscar Robertson did in the early 60s when they just had a lot more possessions.
Yeah.
And they just played at a faster pace.
There's fewer
possessions. And they also played the Thunder, more minutes back then, too.
Yeah, there's fewer possessions. So it's different for Westbrook because he's actually doing it on basically a third of the possessions that Robertson was. So there is some difference with that. But I do think – so here's what I think about triple-doubles. The league has gotten more spread out with guys at the three-point line. I mean, every team has three or four shooters that can knock down the three. You collapse the defense, and I think in years past, especially with the legal defense rule, helping off of dribble penetration when the league was spread out like that was a lot harder because you couldn't pre-rotate, right? You had to stick to your man until the drive happened and then you go. Well, now teams can flood the strong side with help side defenders, and so the smarter play, rather than driving into traffic and trying to finish through 2-3 guys, is to hit the open guy who's, by the way, a 40% three-point shooter, which back in the day there was like 5 in the league, so now there's 4 on every team. So I think that the triple-double thing is very much a symptom of the style of play.
Well, I agree with that. That's a good point. And also, I think that going back to the analytics guys, they figured out, now it's probably been a decade, but they figured out 10 years ago that the marginal risk of shooting a 3 versus a long-ish 2, take the damn 3.
And isn't it weird that it took us this long to figure that out? It's really weird.
It's kind of like with Bill Belichick. I know you hate him, but the whole theory of going for it on fourth. The percentage chance of making it is still great enough that it's worth that risk, right? So you got the combination of way more threes. You still can't touch guys. You know, our friend Rex Chapman tweeted out the other day one of these old school videos of what playing in the 80s was like and guys just getting clobbered.
Right.
So here's what I say, that the scoring's been juiced, and here's where this comes from. It's 4 or 5 different things. One of them is, like you just said, the defensive schemes have changed and it's allowed guys to kick out more for that 3. Number 2, they're shooting more threes than they ever shot before. Number 3, this is a subtle thing. These guys don't play that much. You know, when I was growing up in the 80s, they had to play 4 games in 5 nights, sometimes 3 games in a row, while flying coach.
This is true. Now this helps offense.
Now they're pampered. They get the masseuse. They get the private jet. They get the suite. They come into town. They got 2 or 3 days to relax. They play once a week. I mean, you know, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but the point is that they don't play that much.
It's almost like you're advocating for making these guys fly uncomfortably so they play worse.
I'm not advocating for that. And give Mark Cuban credit.
This is like a Jeff Morton take here.
Give Mark Cuban credit. Mark Cuban revolutionized this. Mark Cuban, when he became owner of the Mavericks, said, hey, look, we're paying these guys gazillions of dollars. What's an extra couple $100,000 to make them exceptionally comfortable? Yeah. I don't have a problem with that. That's a good business decision. I'm just telling you where the juicing is coming from.
Remember when Mark Cuban had Xboxes or PlayStations and things?
In the visitor locker room. So future free agents would oh, my God. He's got PlayStations in the visitor's locker room. What does he have in the home team's locker room? So my point, though, is the pampering, the loosening up of the offense, the increase of the three-pointer, the fact that you can't hand check, the fact that they overcall everything. You know, you and I played a lot of basketball growing up. I always played that if you get hit on the arm but you score anyway, it's not a foul, okay? If you get hit on the arm and it impedes your ability to score, it's a foul.
No such thing as hand ones for you.
Right,
no,
and so I'm just saying, like, the combination of these 4 or 5 things has juiced scoring to a place that I'm uncomfortable with. And I'm an ABA fan. I'm an 80s basketball fan. I loved the Bad Boy Pistons, okay? I love that basketball. But this era of 120 to 110 or 130 to 125 and all these guys getting triple-doubles and all these guys putting up 50, 60-point games, it's a little bit much for me.
So here's where I would disagree with you, and here's why I think scoring is up. A lot of it is the league. Like the freedom of movement rule this year, we've seen a big uptick in both free throws and just general scoring through the lane. So that obviously plays a factor in it. I just think these guys are better, and on the whole.
Oh, yeah, you know, that's fair.
Top to bottom are better, and you look at this. Michael Jordan, you talked about Michael Jordan and James Harden. Like, I think Michael Jordan's the best player of all time. I still think that. He shot 17%. Through his first 4 seasons from the 3-point line. 17%. That's one of the worst, and it didn't take a ton of them, but it just wasn't a good shooter. He actually shot, I believe, right around 30% for his career.
Can I play devil's advocate with you?
If you take out the 3 years where they shortened the 3-point line. And on top of that, the Chicago Bulls employed 1 3-point shooter. They just had 1 guy.
Craig Hodges, Jim Paxson, and Steve Kerr. Pick your stiff.
You just have 1 guy.
Can I just play a little devil's advocate on that? Again, different era. Michael Jordan today would have been coached on shooting 3-pointers. He probably didn't even practice them. Dean Smith probably didn't even have him shoot one for 3 years at North Carolina. You know what I mean? It wasn't even a factor.
But Andy, this is not a knock on old school basketball. Yeah. This is why I always say I don't understand when people get, you know, especially players are like, well, they couldn't play in our day. To me, it's a compliment that the players are better. Because these guys watched them, they studied them, and they added to it. And if you left the league in a healthy place when you left it ripe for them to study you and to take it forward. And so for me, the reason the players are better today is because they have a blueprint to go off.
You know what? That's a really good point, and I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm not one. I can't stand it when Scottie Pippen says, "Oh, you know, this Warriors team, we would have kicked their ass." Yeah. Scottie Pippen, really? Yeah. You got to play in an NBA that expanded from 23 teams to 29 teams over like 7 or 8 years. Yeah. They brought in these raw Europeans, these raw high school players in the mid-90s. You played in three of the most unwatchable finals in NBA history. You had Michael Jordan, who is the greatest player of all time. Scottie, you're a pretty good player yourself. You had a one-dimensional Dennis Rodman and a bunch of stiffs. And you won three straight championships, scoring 85 points a game. I'm agreeing with you. And to me, was the crappiest era of the history of the NBA is 1994 from MJ's retirement all the way up until like 2006. I thought it sucked. Yeah. It sucked watching basketball, okay? And that's the era, Scottie, that you guys think that, you know, you could beat these guys. This Warriors team is phenomenal. I may not like them, but they're phenomenal. So I agree with you. The talent has never been better. And you know what? It permeates all the way through. It permeates all the way down to like the coaching that Nikola Jokic got when he was growing up, because those coaches in Serbia probably have access to footage and lessons and clips that guys in Serbia didn't have 20 years ago.
There's a great article to be written about how YouTube has changed basketball development, because players talk about, well, when I've got YouTube, I started watching. Jokic talks about this. He remembers when YouTube came out because that's when he started watching Michael Jordan, Hakeem Olajuwon.
Well, I remember my travels through Africa with Masai Ujiri and talking to some of these old school African guys. I mean, they were lucky to get a VHS tape cassette that one person in their community maybe had a VHS player to watch a basketball tape. Think about that. Now, as long as you have a smartphone, you can see anything, right?
Yeah.
So there's no question the quality of coaching is better, the quality of the players are better, the quality of the shooting is better. I'm agreeing with all that. I just am a little uncomfortable with this level of scoring, and I just would like to see a little more physicality in the game. And that doesn't mean I'm some old school curmudgeon. In my day, we played 7 games in 8 nights. You know, I just think that there could be a little more control. It's a little out of control. That's all.
Let's take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to wrap up with some Nuggets talk. Talk about the bandwagon. Talk about some of our favorite short Nuggets of all time, which I think will be a fun segment. We'll be right back. All right, so I'm back here on the pod with Andy Feinstein, the former Big Stiff, proprietor of the Denver Nuggets. And, you know, Isaiah Thomas is on the team now, and it is clear if you've ever been to a Nuggets game over the last 4 days that he is probably the most popular Denver Nugget on the roster, even though he's only been here for a very brief period of time. The short guy, I think in all markets, but especially in Denver, the short guy is the fan favorite almost no matter what. First of all, what's your Isaiah Thomas take? I mean, do you have any relationship to him, like any sort of attachment to him as a player before coming here?
No, other than admiration. You know, sure. I think that, you know, I'm 6'5". Aren't you 6'5"?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we're big guys. Yeah. I wish I was 6'5 in high school. I grew after high school, unfortunately my parents had to pay for college. But, but I just think that, you know, when you play basketball and you're our size and you see these guys that are literally, you know, 10 inches shorter than us, and or 7 inches shorter, whatever it is, and they can go to the NBA. So I think they deserve our respect. They deserve a lot of admiration. I have the Andy's mom index of players that she likes. You know, my mom's favorite players were Earl Boykins and Michael Adams and Allen Iverson, and I'm sure now Isaiah Thomas, because there's something about the short guy that I think the average fan loves to root for.
Yeah.
But I think they deserve our admiration, and I think it's easy to kind of, I don't want to say pick on them, but I think it's easy to kind of make fun of them or whatever. But I think Isaiah Thomas was a guy who averaged almost 30 points a game in the NBA. I mean,
he's like 5'2", man. I mean, he's listed at 5'9". And realistically, I think he's probably 5'5" or 5'6".
Oh, easily. I'm very fortunate, as you know. I sit very close to the floor. I got a really up close look at him on Sunday. And I turned to my wife and I said, there's no way this guy's 5'9". I mean, he might be 5'7", 5'6". So, but again, give him credit.
Yeah.
But God, I saw him standing next to Jokic. it's unbelievable. It's like me standing next to an elementary school kid, you know?
It's true.
So
the height difference between those two guys is pretty ridiculous. And that's basketball. That's what's funny, that they play the same sport.
I know. The best photo ever, you got to post it, is Manute Bol and Muggsy Bogues.
Yeah.
And they were teammates in Washington.
What's great about that one in particular is Manute Bol was also just like ridiculously skinny. And Muggsy Bogues was kind of a stocky guy. So
he was, but so I met Muggsy Bogues as part of the NBA Africa program. I got to meet Muggsy Bogues. And maybe he's just lost weight since he's not playing anymore.
Yeah.
He is svelte. He is not. I always thought Muggsy Bogues was like a little tank.
Yeah.
Isaiah Thomas looks like a tank. Muggsy Bogues is so diminutive.
Yeah.
It is astonishing to me that not only did he play in the NBA, but he played at a very high level for a long time.
I imagine he's a pretty hard worker. And some of these guys you know are going to be like hard workers after their post-playing career and stay in good shape. And some of them you kind of know. Jokic, whenever he retires, man, it's going to be about a year. And I think he's going to look like Andre the Giant.
My only concern with Isaiah Thomas, and you're obviously much closer to the team, would just be, does he have that kind of chip on his shoulder? You know,
there's no doubt. You know,
he was the last pick in the draft,
yeah,
and he ascended to this unbelievable level, and now he's kind of hit rock bottom again, and he's building himself back up. And I did worry a little bit from a chemistry standpoint, how he would fit in here, but he seems to have injected a lot of energy in a positive way to the team. But you would know better than me.
So I think he's played four games, and the way I say it, the first game was an A+. The second game, I think, was a B+. The third game was a C+.
What was last night?
This last night was probably a D+.
So. Even though he hit that one crazy shot with the foul?
On rewatch, he looked a lot better. The stretch where this was a blowout, and then it wasn't. And the stretch where it wasn't, he was on the court making some dumb decisions.
Yeah.
So he kind of threw the game away, I thought. But, we'll see with him. I don't have – so I'm a – well, you mentioned, we're big guys. I grow up with a little bit of a chip on my shoulder about the little guys. So, like, you know, so for me, I don't feel this connection to small players, even Iverson and guys like that. I just never, Earl Boykins, those players always annoyed me to a certain extent. But there have been a lot in Denver. I want you to go through a list here and give me some of the all-time best.
So inspired by Isaiah Thomas.
Inspired by him.
We're going to do an anti-stiff list.
Okay.
And these are the top five, not necessarily the best, but the most memorable sub-6-foot Nuggets of all time.
Okay.
And we're going to work our way from 5 to 1.
Okay.
And this is just Andy's favorite list. It's not best. And then we can debate who is best. So number 5, and older fans will remember him, is Monty Tau.
Yeah.
Monty Tau was a little white guy. The only credential he had to qualify as an NBA player is that he was David Thompson's teammate at the University, at North Carolina State University.
Yeah, NC State.
So when the Nuggets brought David Thompson to Denver, they had to make sure that his point guard was here with him. And in fact, some people credit Monty Tau and David Thompson with inventing the alley-oop.
Nice.
So dig into that a little bit. But Monty Tau was basically David Thompson's caddy, but a 5'7" white guy who was David Thompson's right-hand guy and point guard is, you know, that's an all-timer.
I'm looking at photos here, because I'll be honest, I didn't know him.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at photos here, and he kind of looks like, who is it in, Michael J. Fox in the... In the Teen Wolf.
Oh, Teen Wolf movies.
He almost looks like Michael J.
If only he was as good as Teen Wolf.
Yeah, he's got the floppy hair and everything.
Okay, so number 4, we're working our way up the list. So number 4 is a guy who played 13, 14 years in the NBA, including 3.5 here in Denver, and that was Earl Boykins, and who's been doing some broadcasting for the Nuggets.
Yeah.
Earl Boykins was 5'5", or I should say is 5'5". And Earl Boykins was on that team that when Carmelo was here and the Nuggets got back to the playoffs and made the playoffs for 10 straight years, Earl Boykins was part of that. And he averaged double figures every year he played for the Nuggets, including he even averaged 15 points a game before we traded him to Milwaukee in 2007. So
never a fan of this dude.
By the way, I wasn't either. But when you talk about sub-6-footers in the history of Nuggets basketball – and I remember my mom used to say, "Oh, Earl Boykins, he's so cute." I'm like, "Mom, he's not cute. He's a chucking, ball hogging, disaster on offense." But anyway, he was a fan favorite. So you got to have Earl Boykins on your list.
So quick note about Earl Boykins. He had a negative box plus minus every single season he played, which I know this doesn't mean a lot to a lot of people, but it just kind of showed he was like a below average at least by these events.
And supposedly Earl Boykins could like bench press twice his body weight or something like that.
He was a freak athlete.
There were some urban legends.
All of these guys, you don't get to that level unless you have your freak.
Okay, number three on the list. We've gotten five Monty Tau, four Earl Boykins. Number three is Michael Adams. Okay. Michael Adams was...
We're getting to the actual good players.
He was a really good player, an all-time fan favorite. This was a guy who came over to the Nuggets in what I think is the greatest season in Nuggets history, 87-88. That was a team that won, I think, 54 games. And unfortunately, due to some injuries, didn't go to the conference finals. But that was a really fun team. And Michael Adams came over from the Washington Bullets with a player named Jay Vincent, who was pretty good. And he was basically, he played next to Fat Lever. He was a really good player. I mean, he averaged over 14 points a game, then 18 points a game. And then talk about juicing. In the Paul Westhead era Nuggets, Michael Adams. Yeah. Michael Adams, 5'10", and he was really like 5'8". Michael Adams averaged 26 points a game, and I'm embarrassed to say he had a three-point streak that may have been 130-something games. I don't remember the exact number, but in those days, that was a big deal. So Michael Adams is number three.
I like that one.
So I'm now looking at a little controversial.
Were you a big Michael Adams fan? Were you a Michael Adams guy?
Again, I was never a big fan of the little guys. Okay, I was a fat.
This is big. I'm telling you, we have big guy bias here. I like it.
Although I love Fat Lever. He was only 6'3", but I love Fat Lever. I was always an Alex English guy. Yeah. Alex English was my guy.
Yeah.
So the top two, the guy that I'm going to give as number two, most people are going to say is number one.
Oh, I love it.
All right, my number two is Allen Iverson. he didn't play here very long.
Yeah, that factors into it.
He's listed at 6 feet, and I know this is the sub-6-footer club, but anyone who knows Allen Iverson, anyone who's ever shook an Allen Iverson's hand knows he's 5'10".
Yeah.
Which, to me, makes him even greater.
I don't know why the short guys lie about their height. It's more impressive.
No, they have to because they lie about it when they're coming out of high school.
College scholarships. Can't shrink.
Yeah, you can't shrink. And another time when we have more – another day when we have more time, we should talk about how John Wooden used to list his players at UCLA 2 inches shorter than they really were. So when the opposing teams thought they were maybe 6'7", but they were really 6'9 or 6'10",
they show up and you're like, oh God,
I wasn't ready for this. But anyway, so Allen Iverson, all-time great NBA player, not just a Nuggets player, and the fact that he could do what he could do at 5'10 is amazing. Iverson was also a physical freak. He had the wingspan of someone who may be 6'5", 6'6", and large hands.
Right, right.
Which is unique to someone who's only 5'10".
Let me ask you this one. What did you think when the Denver got Allen Iverson? I mean, that's not that long ago.
No, it was that was the year before I started the blog.
Okay.
I loved it. You know, you gotta put it in the context of the time. You know, that we had the Madison Square Garden melee. Melo and JR were going to be suspended for basically the rest of the season or some 20 games or something. The Nuggets had to do something. You know, you talk about incremental growth or linear growth is the word you use.
Yeah,
remember, you know, the Nuggets drafted Carmelo. They signed Camby. They had signed Kenyon. Like, they were building up this team, and we never had a good point guard. We never had one. We had Anthony Carter, and we had Chucky Atkins, and like we never had a good point guard. So
when was Andre Miller around? He was there the first
Andre
year.
Andre was those first few years, and then we got rid of him. Yeah. Oh, we traded him for Iverson. Yeah. He was in the trade.
I loved Andre Miller.
And so
more than Iverson.
I had an attitude back then of what do we have to lose?
Which was the right attitude.
You know, I mean, Carmelo was the third overall pick. Camby was the first, I think. Iverson was the first. Kenyon was what? You know, he was the first overall pick. Camby may have been a second overall pick. I mean, we were just loaded with talent. And that's why I argued for George Karl to get fired. I didn't understand how you could have this much talent and barely make the playoffs. It made no sense to me.
Yeah.
But so I liked Iverson being here. You know, I think from a chemistry standpoint, him and Carmelo were okay. You know, they had a great run going into the playoffs that year when Melo came back from suspension. And then, you know, typical George Karl in the playoffs, they got smoked by the Spurs. But anyway, what do you think?
My take when Iverson got here was, I don't think this is better, but it's different in a fun way.
Yeah.
You know, it's like anything's possible, but whatever, let's try it. They needed, the Nuggets have kind of gotten stale because they made the playoffs, lost the first round, made the playoffs, lost the first. And they did that enough that you were kind of like, okay, this is who they are.
Yeah.
And then you get Iverson, you're like, I still think they're going to lose in the first round, but you know what?
Well, see, I didn't. And I'm an optimist. I thought we had a 60-win team.
Yeah.
And I thought George Karl coached a 60-win team to a 50-win team and coached a conference finals of competitor to an eighth seed, you know.
Yeah.
The West was just as tough then as it is now. It was an arms race.
Yeah.
And you had to have Carmelo and Iverson and Camby and Kenyon to compete. And they just the chemistry wasn't there. Okay. But anyway.
All right, so number one,
Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. You know, he's listed at 6'1", he might be 5'10". Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf was Steph Curry before there was Steph Curry. And don't take my word for it. Phil Jackson even said it.
I trust your word over Phil Jackson.
Mahmoud might have been the greatest pure shooter the Nuggets have ever had. And he was a little bit before his time, quirky guy. He came here as Chris Jackson and he was overweight, and then he converts to Islam and he becomes Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf and gets his diet in order, gets his life in order, gets his structure in order. And he was just a phenomenal, phenomenal player.
Let me ask you this, though. And I'm not trying I have to debate you on this. There were 3 years that the NBA shortened the three-point line.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. He shot 38%, 39%, 38% from three in those years. Every other year, he was below 35%. In fact, a couple years below 30%. So I want to believe this, you know, best pure shooter. But one, I've watched the tape. They didn't guard the three-point line like they do now. It was almost like, you know, we'll contest, but...
Let him shoot it.
Yeah. So, guy shooting, you know, these terrible numbers, I can't buy it. He was certainly, here's what I'll say about him from what I remember, because this was around the era I first started watching basketball. The 90s were about cool. The 90s were a cool era. Guys were cool. That's when they first started becoming, like, you know, stars in this way of, like, they were setting the culture. And he played, he had the crossover. He had the sexy moves.
Watch Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf going for 51 points in Utah against John Stockton, who's one of the greatest defensive guards ever and one of my all-time favorite players. And then you can tell me if he's a great shooter or not. I just think that, and look, we all have some nostalgia in us. I'll grant you that. Not a huge stats guy other than I just thought from a watchability factor, Mahmoud was fabulous.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's unfortunate how his career played out. He was basically Colin Kaepernick before there was Colin Kaepernick.
Right.
He exercised his free speech, First Amendment rights, and wouldn't stand for the national anthem.
Right.
But he was a phenomenal player. Not a good playoff player, but a great regular season player.
Yeah.
In fact, another guy on the diminutive list is Robert Pack.
Yeah, see, and I'm
Robert
Pack,
well, because I think he was over 6 feet.
With the hair, maybe. Yeah,
but Robert Pack.
I don't think I've met him.
He may be under. Yeah, but Robert Pack really took over the playoffs in 94. We don't beat the Sonics, and we don't go toe-to-toe with Utah without Robert Pack.
What's funny about watching that Game 5, we did a whole rewatch. Robert Pack and Brian Williams, I thought were the two best players in that Game 5.
They were. There's no question.
Mahmoud got benched,
He got benched.
And Mutombo got foul trouble, so he was out for a while.
No, Brian, BW was...
He was a good player.
He was a great player. Bison Daly, may he rest in peace. He was a great player, and he was a very worldly, very curious guy.
Yeah.
He was an all-time personality. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
He won a ring with the Bulls.
That's right. Yeah, he was an integral part of that team. So, got a couple more topics here before we wrap up. This Nuggets team is on pace at the moment, I think, for 57 wins, which, correct, as crazy as it is, would be a franchise record in the NBA.
Ties the
franchise record. When 58, you have the best record. So it's weird to think, because we think of this team as the start of, or at least somewhere near the start of an era. But if they won 50, what would it take for this to be considered the best Nuggets team of all time? Give me some qualifiers.
Well, the bench, the bar is low. Okay. One can make an argument that the three best teams in Nuggets history are the three that go to the conference finals. So you have the 78 Nuggets, David Thompson, Dan Issel, 85 Nuggets, Issel, English, Lever, and then the 09 Nuggets, which is Chauncey, Carmelo, George Karl, right? So those are, I think, the three benchmarks.
Sure.
And those teams, you know, the 78 team didn't even win 50 games. But the 85 team won 52 games, and then the 09 Nuggets of George Karl won 54. The 57-win team choked. Absolutely choked in the first round against the Warriors. George Karl got completely outfoxed by Mark Jackson, who I don't think is a particularly good coach.
They also lost Gallinari.
They did. That's fair.
They lost their best scorer.
That's fair. And that should be kept in mind. So I'm saying the bottom line is the bar is low. Can you at least agree the bar is low?
Very low.
If I don't care so much about regular season wins. I mean, ask the Toronto Raptors and the Atlanta Hawks how much regular season wins count the last few years, right?
Right.
So I think that if they win, you know, if they win 55 to 60 games and they go to the conference finals, you know, it could be in that conversation. I mean, what's really embarrassing about Nuggets history is the 09 Nuggets team, by winning two games in the conference finals, got the farthest that any team has ever gotten in our franchise history. So But that's the bar. I mean, if they lose in the second round, then they're not in the mix yet, but maybe they'll get there next year.
So if they win, let's say 58 games,
yeah,
lose in game 7 of the second round,
yeah,
not the best team of all time.
Well, you know, one of the most underrated Nuggets teams of all time, are the 85-86 Nuggets. No one ever talks about that
Follow
team.
Up here.
They lost to the Houston Rockets of Ralph Sampson and Hakeem Olajuwon in a double overtime game 6 in Denver in the second round. And that may have been the best team we ever had. So yeah, it's a matter of opinion, right. This team's certainly in the mix, but they do need to do something in the playoffs. A first-round playoff exit or a second-round 4-0 or 4-1 loss is not going to get them into the pantheon of great Nuggets teams. But they're on their way. And, you know, Nikola Jokic is he could be a transformational, generational-type player. I mean, he's unbelievable.
Man, I think he's already there. Last night was such a fun night because Steven Adams, who's widely regarded as one of the best defensive centers. And
just
because
he looks mean.
He's also the strongest guy.
He looks like he's Aquaman's brother.
Yeah. But Jokic made him unplayable. They benched him. And I don't know if Steven Adams has ever been benched before. That might have been the first time in his career that they were like, you know what, we need to put Nerlens Noel out there because you're getting cooked.
I wouldn't bench him. So, I'm terrified.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. All right, we're going to wrap up here with... Last time you were on the show, you had ruffled some feathers by saying that you didn't want any of the bandwagon fans, and I thought it was funny. I totally get the sentiment. I disagree with you in terms of, like, you know, there's a certain amount of elitist in saying, like, oh, we're closed for service or whatever. But there is a point that I think you were making, which was that you don't want the fans that just jump from bandwagon to bandwagon. That's who you don't want on the bandwagon.
Yeah, I felt bad saying that. I didn't mean it. I forget who the reader's name was who commented. And, you know, when you write this for the site like you do and you do these podcasts, you know, sometimes even if 80% of the people agree with me and one or two fans don't, that doesn't mean they're not right. They're not wrong. Right. I felt bad. So I think as a general principle, we're not – to all the listeners and all the readers out there, Denver Stiffs and the Denver Nuggets – fan world, we're not some elitist club, okay? This isn't like Denver Country Club in the 1950s where we only allowed certain types of people through our doors, okay?
Sure.
So we're a very open club. And my only point was, you know, I don't want someone who like rooted for the Warriors to all of a sudden like, oh, now I root for the Nuggets just because they're winning.
Yeah.
But we all root for different teams at different times.
Sure.
I loved the Warriors before they got Kevin Durant.
Right.
Like, I didn't want them to beat the Nuggets, but I loved what they did.
There's a difference, too, though, between being a fan and just like appreciate them. Because I like, there's a lot of teams that I'm like, oh, I like that team. I don't like the team. I like this version
of
them.
That's my whole point.
Moment.
That's my whole point. But did I go out and buy a Steph Curry jersey?
Right.
No.
Or tell people I'm a
like,
fan of
I'm just trying to think of one other team that I like. I usually hate everybody but the Nuggets, but like, you know, I don't have a Kawhi Leonard jersey in my closet, but I am absolutely rooting for the Raptors to get to the finals. So that was my only point. I was just trying to say that, you know, I hope that all the fans out there know Nuggets fans are appreciative that you like what we're doing here in Denver. It's something to be celebrated. You're welcome to join the bandwagon, for lack of a better word. But just, you know, don't bail on us when, no, if God forbid, one of our top players gets hurt and we win 38 games next year. Don't bail on us.
It's like a marriage, you know. You say, like, in sickness and in health. So we're
in health
at the moment.
Yeah, but you and I and Jeff Morton and Nate Timmons and Gordon and Zach and Brendan and Mike and
squad.
All the guys that work for this site and Daniel and everybody down the line, right? And all of our amazing, amazing Denver Stiffs loyal readers and fans, we are through sickness and through health. We stand by this team no matter what. And to quote Bill Simmons, one of the best quotes he ever had was, we basically root for laundry. And we root for the jersey, no matter who's wearing it. And sometimes it's really painful.
Yeah.
You know, it's really, really painful.
But you know this even as a fan. Some teams, you're a fan of the team through whatever. But some teams you just like a little more. And this is a team, I think... I loved all these Nuggets, different versions of the Nuggets. But this one, I just connect with more. I like them. They're easy to root for, and they're pretty damn good.
By the way, that's fair, and it doesn't mean I've liked all the players, and it doesn't mean I've liked all the teams. I hated the Brian Shaw Nuggets. I hated it. No, I couldn't watch it. It was like watching a team playing through quicksand, you know? And I hated the Brian Shaw Nuggets, and yet I love the Jeff Buzdelic Nuggets that won 17 games
because
they won 17 games more than they should have. But I did not like the Dan Issel Nuggets of the late 90s. Those were painful teams. I did not like the Paul Westhead Nuggets. I didn't think that comical farce was good for anybody.
It's funny because you're saying you were a fan, but you hated him. And it's so accurate. That's yes, what a fan is. That's what being a fan is.
To me, so the joke, here's the joke I used to tell when I went to college and they said, oh, you're from Denver. You must be a Broncos fan or a Nuggets fan. I always looked at, like, the Broncos were the kid that goes to the Ivy League school.
Yeah.
You know, I looked at all four teams like my children. So the Broncos were the kid that went to the Ivy League school. The Nuggets were the kid that had all this potential, but he couldn't get into the Ivy League school. You know, but he had all this potential, but you loved him sometimes, you hated him sometimes. To me, was like, the Rockies were the newborn.
Okay, yeah.
And the Avalanche were the kid that we adopted from a foreign country. and that's how I always looked at my four teams.
How have I never heard this from you? It's like too perfect.
Yeah, that's how I always looked at those four teams. And so, and now here, you know, and here we are, you know, I'm 43 years old. I've rooted for these teams as long as they've been in Denver.
They were late bloomers.
Yeah, they're late bloomers. And, you know, you're allowed to be mad at your children sometimes. It doesn't mean you don't love them, right, but you're allowed to be mad at them. And there's times, hey, look, I said George Karl should get fired. I love George Karl. I love the Nuggets. But I was really mad at him. You know, he was doing a crummy job.
Yeah.
And the whole team was doing a crummy job.
Yeah, yeah.
But now, you got to celebrate it when they deserve to be celebrated. And this team deserves to be celebrated. From the top down, by the way, from Josh Kroenke to Tim Connelly,
no doubt
all the way
it.
Down
yeah,
to Monty Morris, and to you and the organization, everything you guys are doing, this is celebration time.
The coolest comment I've ever seen, we'll wrap up with this, the coolest comment I got, it happened a month ago, somebody said, it was after the Warriors lost. Remember, the Nuggets lose by 30 games, and this guy hops in from Serbia, from somewhere in Europe, in broken English, and says, I think I'm officially a Nuggets fan. Because it's the team, it's the coaches, it's the owner, it's everything. It's the writers, it's the broadcast crew, it's everything kind of forms this perfect sphere that just all seems to fit each other. And to me, it's like, it's cool because that is what being a fan is about. You feel a part of it. We feel at this show, we feel like we're a part of the Denver Nuggets. The fans feel like they're a part of this experience, and I think that's what's so cool about it all. Andy, this was a great Stiff Summit. I think a success.
Big Stiff Summit.
Big Stiff Summit. The Big Stiff Summit.
We'll do it again. Let's do it again in a few weeks.
Well, the season will be wrapping up, so if we do it every month or you know, every couple weeks, whatever, we'll be really at some interesting time. So thank you for coming on. Do you want to give your shout out? I have a note here that you have a shout out.
Oh, I do have a shout out. So my very, very good friend Adam Gordon was at the game last night with his son Brian, and he texted me to let me know that when he and his son Bri go to games together, the Nuggets are now 9-0. So Adam, Bri, we need you to go to all of the playoff games this year at Pepsi Center to keep the win streak going.
Were they using your tickets?
No, they weren't using my tickets.
Okay, I was going to say, if they were...
But I do get them tickets occasionally, and like I said, really good friends, big fans, and there's an example. They are Philadelphia imports, so Adam still gets through for his Sixers, but he's a diehard Nuggets fan and has been for like 15 years now.
Well, there you go. Thanks so much, everybody, for tuning in, and of course, we will be back tomorrow recapping a game against the Utah Jazz. Hopefully it's a win. We'll see everybody then.
Thank you for listening to the Locked on Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.